The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for seven continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to our Sunday Space Show program. I'm your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. Today is an open lines discussion program. We much prefer hearing from you by telephone, as always, which is 866-687-7223. But we do take your emails, drspace@thespaceshow.com, and also your blog post, which you would get to by going to thespaceshow.com all the way to the far right for the upcoming show menu. And then you click on today's program. It's the first one listed. If you go all the way to the bottom of that page, you will see a place for posting messages. And as soon as you do that, I'll get a copy of it and can read and integrate it into our program today. In addition to this being a regular open lines show, it's also a special We Want to Hear Your Space Show Stories program. So when I told the story a few shows back about Rex Ridenour and the highway patrolman who listened to the space show recognized him as a guest on the show, and he ended up having a nice space conversation with Rex and no ticket, I thought maybe many of you out there have heard or experienced or have space show stories of your own to tell. So I want to hear those stories, and good stories may, with your permission, end up in the Space Show book, which, believe it or not, is, I almost hate to say it, but it is moving toward completion. And some of your stories might make it in there. Of course, we would clear that with you before ever doing that. So if you have a space show story that you think is interesting to share, you can tell us on the telephone, and you can post it on the blog, or you can send it to me in a personal email. Three ways to get that story out there. And if you're okay with it being in the book and you want to add a line that says okay to put it in the book, or if you want to approve what it says, if we edited any or anything like that, just go ahead and let me know. Before we start taking phone calls and emails, I want to give you an idea of what the upcoming schedule is. Believe it or not, November is full. Short of a cancellation or short of me adding a special program to the schedule, which I could still do, November is full and December is really filling up. And then January is going to be a little questionable, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. So Tuesday night, Bob Zimmerman returns, and he wants to look at Space 2022 and Space 2023 going forward. Whether Bob can talk about the election and its space impact remains to be seen, because I don't want to talk about the general election on the show. But for space, anything goes. Okay, so that is on November 8th. Hotel Mars is still a little bit up in the air, but we're working on an Ad Astra article and Ad Astra in general program with John, and also about why it's important to go out there and settle space. So, but it's not confirmed yet. Friday, November 11th is no show. It's the Veterans Day national holiday. So there'll be no program. Keith Henson is returning after 10 or 11 years as a guest to the Space Show. Those of you who participate with the Howard Bloom email list know that Keith is a prolific poster of commentary. He often has a lot to say, and he's coming back on the Space Show Sunday, a week from today. November 15th, now this show is going to start a little bit at a different time. So make a note, because you'll want to hear it. We're starting at 6:45 Pacific Time, and that would be 9:45 Eastern Time. And Dr. Brandenburg, has contacted me. He wants to talk about his Mars Society presentation, which he claims is a big hit, and that would not surprise me because I've been with John when he has spoken at both Mars Society as well as peer-reviewed conferences, and he is a giant hit. I mean, I've said it before at the AIAA gig that we went to not too long ago. He had people standing out in the hallway, and he took up the speaker's time, who was to follow John, and nobody left the room. In fact, more and more people kept coming in. So I can understand him being a big hit at the Mars Society conference, which was last week. So that's going to be Tuesday, November 15th, and it's going to start at 6:45. He also has new info on Newcomb's on Mars. So I'm going to post some of it on the blog ahead of the show. But the argument has been picked up by several other organizations and news media and is getting a lot of traction. And he's getting a lot of demand for interviews. And that's why we're starting the show a little bit early. Special show added starting at 7 p.m. From the Aerospace Corporation, Dr. Sam Wilson is back with us. And his paper will be uploaded to our blog prior to the show. But you'll be reading about him and his latest work very, very shortly. November 18th, the very noted author Brad Bergen has a new space book out. And he's going to be featured on the Friday, November 18th show. I have the book, but unfortunately I forgot to bring it in the room. So I can't give you the precise name, but I will do that later in this show. So now for November, we get a little tricky because I'm driving back to Northern California for Thanksgiving with my family. So I'm going to miss live programs on November 20th, 22nd, 25th, and 27th. And that's a hard miss because we're going to be active in the fundraising campaign to fund the space show for 2023. I will be actively working the Facebook and LinkedIn and space show newsletter announcements from my hotel and my laptop, but I plan on doing my best to make up those four programs by adding shows between then and December. And I haven't added them yet, but I will be doing so. Okay, we resume live programming with the NASA Capstone program. That's Tuesday, November 29th. December 2nd is on hold. I'm waiting for guest confirmation, and when I get that, I will announce that particular program. Another one I want to announce is December 6th, a documentary movie has been made. It's going to be on Amazon Prime, called Good Night Oppie, O-P-P-Y. You can figure out what that's about. And some of the key people behind Opportunity are going to be on the space show talking about this documentary film, which will by then be on Amazon Prime. John Jossi is doing a special type of year-end review, December 13th. Michael Listener is doing a legal and space policy review on December 18th. No program on Christmas. And Tom Olson returns for his annual sort of new space, commercial space, end of the year program that he's been doing almost since the first year of the space show. So that Tom's program will be this year, Friday, December 30th. So we still have some December dates. And as I said, if I can do it, I will add in four additional dates to make up for what I'm missing in November. But that is my upcoming schedule. If you have guests that you would like me to contact, if you have their contact information where it's easy to find, I will certainly be happy to do that. And if you send me guests and nobody knows how to reach the person, there's not a whole lot I can do. But if you have any kind of contact information, even if it's by snail mail, I will do that. But I'll tell you, the mail is really terrible, and it's going to get worse because of the Christmas season. But I bought stamps yesterday, and they have raised the price of postage for the holidays, according to the postal clerk who sold me the stamps, just for the holidays. How convenient and how nice, right? And I mailed a first-class letter to my brother in Houston when I left for the dental visit last week. And he still hasn't gotten it. So it's been about a week, and I mailed it at a Dropbox. I didn't mail it out of my residence address. So if you do send me contact information for snail mail, just be prepared for it to take a while to get here. Now for the January schedule, and then I'll open up for open lines. I have my final dental visit returning to San Francisco as it now stands on January 11th. So there will be no show on Tuesday, January 10th, and there'll be no Hotel Mars on January 11th. Now it gets really tricky, folks. As many of you know, those of you that are personal friends and in touch with me on a personal level, back in the summer, I hurt my right knee really badly. Great grammar there, so forgive my grammar. I didn't have an accident. I don't know what happened. It just started hurting like hell, so they put me in physical therapy, which has helped to some degree, and I'm still in physical therapy. But we finally did the MRIs and sent me to a noted knee surgeon here in Las Vegas, and I have some tears and damage in my knee that needs to be surgically corrected. So I'm doing that on January 17th, but I am told that knee surgery recovery time, even arthroscopic knee surgery, which is what this is, takes time, and I probably won't be driving for a couple of weeks. Pepper will have to do without me in the boarding kennel. And before I can really walk and be at ease and drive a car again. So I will be able to do shows as long as I'm not on narcotic pain pills, as long as I am home, and as long as I can make it upstairs, because my studio is upstairs. And whether that's within the first week of coming out of surgery or whether that's 2 weeks later, I can't tell you. So I do have a wicked, twisted, turning stairway in this house. It is difficult to navigate. You certainly wouldn't want to navigate it if you were drinking. Let me put it that way to you. I wouldn't want to navigate it taking narcotic pain pills. And they may, because I live alone, send me to rehab. That ought to be a lot of fun for 2 to 4 or 5 days. And so clearly I would not be able to do any shows while I'm at rehab, although that might be fun if I could. So my January schedule beyond around January 15th or 16th is a little bit up in the air. And I may not have that down pat until I see what my recovery is like is from knee surgery. So I'm sure many of you out there have had arthroscopic knee repair surgery before, and maybe you've bounced back real quickly, and maybe you haven't. I know they start you on physical therapy pretty quickly. So I'm still doing physical therapy. My knee is being exercised and strengthened, which will make recovery a little easier. But as the kind surgeon told me in his office, if you were 30 or 40, I'd say you'd bounce back in a week and you'd be driving shortly thereafter. But at 76, it's going to take you some time. Just what I wanted to hear, right? So January's a little up in the air. I will safely start booking toward the last of the third week of January, because I'm going to assume I will at least be home and can at least get upstairs. So probably around the 25th or something, I'll maybe start broadcasting again. February should be normal, and hopefully normal thereafter. So January's a little fuzzy, and as I said, I'm not sure I can make it unfuzzy until I really see how I'm doing, where they send me, and whether I can get off of the narcotics really quickly. I don't do well on narcotic pain pills. I don't even want to take them, but I guess they say it's essential to subdue the pain, especially if you're working on physical therapy right away, which is what they have you do. So I know many of you, as I said, have had knee surgery. I had it once before, maybe 35 years ago. It's quite different then, and I was quite different then. It's half the age I am now, or just a little bit more than, a little less than half the age. So, and I guess age makes a difference in your recovery from all this garbage. So that's my plan, and that's the schedule so far for the end of the year. So let's go to space. So the phone line is available if anybody's listening and wants to call, 866-687-7223. Email is drspace@thespaceshow.com. So Artemis and SLS has moved to the pad. I think they've got a launch scheduled at November 14th. Who out there thinks it'll go, or will it be delayed? Your thoughts on that? And will it be a successful mission? That's one thing that we can talk about. I understand that Musk is planning his Starship for early December. And hopefully that demo flight works and is very successful as well. I hope both of the flights work and are very successful. While Twitter really doesn't have a lot to do with space, nor does Tesla, if you want to talk about Musk and Tesla and his takeover of Twitter, I'll say it's fair game for the show. I think he's kept it pretty separate from SpaceX and his space activities. But I do notice a lot of the opposition messages that come in about Musk and Twitter and sometimes Tesla do blur the grounds and the lines with SpaceX. They kind of lump everything that Musk does together, and they don't really separate. So if you want to comment about Tesla and Musk or Twitter and Musk, and if you see a connection to SpaceX or concerns, it's fair game. So I invite you to make that kind of phone call. And if any of you have anything on your watch list for the conclusion of 2022 that you think is worth us knowing about and maybe putting it on our individual watch list as well, we'd like to hear from you. Or if you have anything on the watch list for space for 2023, we'd certainly like to hear from you as well. One of the things I've been hearing from different guests, and again, I heard it on Friday with Andrew Chanin, and that is thinking about the election in space, is that space has become so important and essential to our national security and our economy. And this includes commercial space and even the new space section of commercial space, that it's pretty immune from some of the economic problems that are in the country, but also the bipartisan support that it has will continue regardless of election outcome. So that's a fair topic, election outcome and impact on possible commercial space, national security space, all of it put together. You might want to comment on that. And do you think it's become so important and so essential that it will largely escape some of the economic consequences of other sectors of our economy, given the inflation, the raise in interest rates, and stuff like that? Now, Andrew didn't say it would escape scot-free, that the interest rates and some of the stuff going on will slow down capital inflows and will change the landscape a little bit, but probably not to the degree that it's going to impact other parts of the economy. And again, he pointed to how absolutely essential space has become, both for the economy and for national security. So I'd love to get your thoughts on that as well. So the lines are available. The one line is available, 866-687-7223. We'd certainly welcome your phone call. Email is available, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And also what's available is the blog. So as we're waiting to see if you want to talk to us or send us an email, don't forget that we're a 501c3 nonprofit with One Giant Leap Foundation. Technically, we are already in our annual campaign for 2023 and to fund the space show for 2023, although I have not yet started sending out campaign letters. I'll probably wait on that for another week to 10 days. But it is essential that we raise the money during between now and December 31st to fund the program going into the next year. So as a nonprofit, obviously you get a tax deduction. If the tax deduction is important for you for 2022, we have to receive your gift in our possession by December 31st. Because if it comes in January, it's going to be a gift for 2023. So if that's important to you, keep those dates in mind. And in addition to that, we have a PayPal button at the top of our homepage. That's the easiest way to support us. It goes directly to our One Giant Leap bank account, okay? And we thank you very much for that. If you want to mail us a check, it is mailed to One Giant Leap Foundation. You use our Las Vegas address, which is on our website and PayPal. And if you need assistance with that, just email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. We do also for 2023 have the sponsors and billboard advertising program. So both are treated the same, both pay the same, and they get the banner ads going across the homepage. And I read messages that they have written to promote themselves on the longer format shows. Sometimes we get bogged down in discussion and it doesn't happen. But always, always, I at least shout them out. Northrop Grumman is a sponsor this year. The Space Foundation, Astrox, AIAA, Moonwards, Celestis, the National Space Society, and Dr. Chaim Ben Arroyo is a sponsor billboard advertiser with his great lunar books. And remember, if you purchase his lunar books through the Amazon banner ad that he has running on our homepage, Amazon pays a portion of the purchase price to the space show. And you may not think that that's very important, but it really is important. And we are very appreciative of that Amazon program. Also, their SMILE program for nonprofits. If you designate One Giant Leap as your selected nonprofit with Amazon on their SMILE program, every time you purchase anything, dog food, deodorant, anything for your house, light bulbs, a percentage of your purchase price goes to your designated charity. In this sense, it's One Giant Leap Foundation. And it's smile.amazon.com. It's the exact same products, exact same website, except it's triggered and focused to One Giant Leap in once you designate us as your charity. So we appreciate your support. It's very important. And if you want the show to be a really great show for 2023, please donate. And your donations keep us on the air and help us do great programming. We have a caller on hold. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to our special open lines today. Who are you? Where are you, please?
Hi, This is John in Fort Worth.
Hi, John. Welcome back.
By the way, I do what you're saying on Amazon very routinely there.
You do the Smile program?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't do it for myself, but I probably should, but because I buy a lot of stuff from Amazon, but I use the One Giant Leap portal, which is a little different. But what do you do with Smile? Tell people how it works. Maybe they're not familiar with it.
Well, you have to actually have the address. I've bookmarked it on my, Edge browser, and I just click on that when I actually want to buy something from Amazon, and then that takes you into the page, and then you go ahead and buy whatever you're doing. It, I guess, it automatically gives a certain amount of the percentage price of what you get. I don't think it's a lot, but it's something. Right?
It's something, yeah, and it's the same Amazon that you would be doing without doing it. You're not paying any more for it. It's not differently priced or anything like that, is it?
No, it isn't. Same thing. You just have to go through that first, then click on the Smile or whatever, and then it'll take you there.
Yeah, so it's smile.amazon.com, and it'll tell you how to set it up, which is really easy. And then it gives you a list of nonprofits to select from, because they have
right.
to be verified and approved by Amazon. And One Giant Leap is on the list, and you click that one, and you can only click one. You can't share this with multiple nonprofits. And we appreciate your doing that. So even if you buy shoes online, and let's say you use Zappos, which now is affiliated with Amazon, and you buy Zappos shoes through your Amazon site, you can do that through Smile as well. So, you know, if you're using it for more and more of your products at home and personal products or car products, it's a great way to help out a nonprofit that you approve of and that you like, even if it's not One Giant Leap.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought I'd mention that. But yeah, on the launch, is that really going to be in the middle of, like, right after, is it after noon or is it after midnight? I saw the date, 12-something.
What, for SLS or for Starship?
For the SLS, yeah.
All I saw was November 14th. So
I saw a time at one point. Okay, well, anyway, if it's the middle of the night, then it'll get delayed and you'll be up all night trying to watch it.
Well,
instead.
I think it's going to be delayed anyway. But so it says the Space Launch System is scheduled for November 14th from Kennedy, but they're not. I'm not looking at a time. I'm on one of their pages. What is the launch date? Let's see if they give the time. Okay, mission Monday, November 14th, with liftoff of the rocket carrying Orion at 12:07 a.m. Eastern. So that'd be an hour earlier for you in Texas, and that would be 9:07 for me in Las Vegas.
So it isn't. It's a night launch they're planning on then.
Yeah.
So morning, right? A.M. Oh,
yeah, A.M. Well, it's nighttime, and it's a 69-minute launch window.
But they said 12 Eastern, right? 12 A.M. would be after.
It'd be 9
P.M. for you, right? I mean,
yeah, it'd be 9:07. But it says it's the morning of the 14th. So basically, that's Sunday night, Monday morning.
Okay.
So
all right.
See, that's Sunday
good.
Night for me, if I'm reading that correctly.
Okay, so that would still be night for me then too, because I'm an.
Yeah, it'd be the end of Sunday night because you're an hour behind, so it'd be 11:07 for you.
Interesting, but at any rate, it'll be after dark wherever it happens. I guess that's the main point.
Well, maybe it's dark, so we can't see if they're going to have to take it back to the VAB again.
Yeah.
Do you think it'll go, and they're ready to launch and it'll work, or do you think it'll be delayed again?
Oh, let's be optimistic. What the heck? I mean, sooner or later, I guess it'll be launched, and so you know, it's just a question of whether they've solved all these little glitches they had or not, right? Or whether something else pops up.
Well, and it's been for what 3 weeks in the VAB being worked on, so. Hopefully there are no glitches from having had it worked on and they've done their due diligence and it's ready to go.
Yeah. Well, they don't have many chances on this thing. They better work or else, so to speak. So, anyhow, But another thing coming up, of course, is the we're near the release of the next UAP report. Also, that's coming up, right?
I don't have a date for that. Do you?
I don't have a date. I thought it was originally supposed to be on Halloween, but I think they postponed it. So it's probably going to be postponed after the election, I have a feeling. But
well, the election is Tuesday. It's not going to happen between now and Tuesday.
Well, it's imminent. That's what I'm saying. It's very close, but I have a feeling that they may have decided to postpone it after the election. But there's a leak out that suggests that they've had 366 new cases, of which they can only explain half of them. But they're doing better to explain than they did on the first attempt.
Latest USO Defense Intelligence report due to be made public soon. So this was 3 days ago. So, of course, it's declassified, so all the good stuff is not going to be reported.
Of course.
I don't see that they've got any date here. But, again, I know you and I differ on this, but I'm skeptical, and I don't know whether what they release or don't release is credible or misinformation or anything else. I have no way of knowing.
You don't trust your government?
No, I don't. And you know, if they send a mission of scientists to Mars to either verify or not verify Dr. V's nukes on Mars theory, I wouldn't necessarily believe the findings of that esteemed scientific community going to Mars either. I think there are too many agendas involved and too much politics involved and still too much secrecy. So we'd only know what they'd want us to know.
Well, obviously they're keeping things secret. But the government usually doesn't outright lie. What they usually do is mislead, omit, obfuscate, but they rarely ever flat out lie. You know, once in a while they do, but usually they kind of, you know what I mean, twist the truth a little bit, but they don't really, or don't quite, they say something that's misleading in the way it's stated. If you look at, but if you look at it literally, it didn't really say what you thought it meant, you know.
I don't know. I just am doubtful that we can ever get real objective facts and truth anymore from our government. I just don't see it. Honest to God, I'd be skeptical of anything. That even if they said aliens are here among us and they gave us examples, I'd still have a lot of doubt that we're being told what's really real.
You're really skeptical. At any rate, I just be interested to see what they come up with. It is notable, though, that they're explaining more of the cases than they did the first time around. But they haven't got quite to the blue book level yet.
No, and we'll still be left with the same questions that we have right now. Is, you know, if they're real, where do they come from? And what's the technology? And if they're not real, how are they being faked? And if they're ours, who has them? I mean, do you think they're really going to answer any of those questions?
Not in this report.
No. So why get excited?
But it's another step, by the way. But the real thing is going to be the new Defense Authorization Act, which will allow people to come forward, apparently, and testify without the fear of being prosecuted.
Well,
and that is a major change. I mean, if they put that into the law, that's important. The president signs it, then it's law. That's a whole different thing than just a whistleblower or a leaker today, you know, which could go to prison or whatever.
Yeah, but then you have to verify the accuracy and all of that of the testimony. If it's eyewitness testimony, you've got problems in that. You know, trial lawyers have always pointed out the weaknesses of eyewitness testimony in trials. So it's probably, you know, similar if you're going to report that you saw this flying saucer hovering over your herd of cattle, and then one of them suddenly, you know, was beamed up to the saucer.
I don't know what that worked for the government and worked for corporations that actually were in the programs, and right now under security restrictions, like for instance Elizondo, there's a lot he says he can't say.
Well, he can now say. But how much embellishment does Elizondo put on some of what he knows? And that's a question
we don't know.
And if you ask him, he'll say, "Oh, no, I'm not embellishing anything." No.
But what he says is mostly is I can't talk about certain things because they're still classified and I can't talk about them. Right? Well, I mean, absolutely. If they legally remove that restriction.
Well, so how do you know he's not embellishing the story once they remove the restriction? How do you know his memory's not a little bit embellished?
It's a process. It's a process.
Well,
it'd be interesting to see what comes out. If nothing comes out, then I'll probably say, well, maybe. But I think there may be something coming out, particularly from retired people. I mean, I think that I still would love to get this Admiral Wilson and Eric Davis before the committee under oath, and then see what they're saying then once they're actually under oath, as opposed to making statements to journalists.
What? I'm sure they're not invalidating Eric Davis's classified categories and his responsibilities. He's not being relieved of that, and all of a sudden he can say whatever he wants about anything he wants to say. He still has classified information, and the guy has spent his lifetime guarding classified information and speaking to people in a way that protects that information. You really think he's going to change?
The real issue on him is did he actually have the meeting, and is that an actual, the best of his ability recording of what was said in the meeting, or did he make it up? That's his thing under oath, penalty of perjury. Wilson then is, did you have that meeting with them, or do you still deny that you had that meeting with them? That's what I want to see. Because right now they're contradicting each other, sort of. One guy is sort of implying he did, but he ain't saying more. The other one's saying, no, it never happened.
Well, I don't know.
That's worth finding out. I think this is the kind of, and I think there's people that have retired from some of these organizations also that no longer need to maintain a job out of it. And that's probably where the real payoff could be.
Well,
I mean, if you want to still be working in this field, then that's a whole different issue.
Well,
obviously,
I will probably be a skeptic to the end, but I will continue to cover the topic, and I would really hope that some information would come out that I think would be credible enough to sort of assuage my skepticism. But I'm a skeptic here on almost everything with the government, and I think the behavior of the government with the pandemic and the vaccines and all of that has done nothing but increase my skepticism. So that's a whole different topic, but it's the same kind of behavior, and mandating people. But what are they going to do? Mandate us on UAPs? I just don't know. I'd love to get to the bottom of all of this, but I don't know how we're going to be able to do it and have it.
I don't think it's going to come in one piece necessarily. I think. I'm just looking at this. This is something we've never had before, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of it.
Well,
I mean, this has been going on for a long time, and the real thing I'm still looking for is there any truth to the stories that we actually have absolute proof in our hands at some site that's being studied or not? And that's why the Wilson thing is quite interesting, for instance.
Well, we'll cover it, and I'm sure you will be talking about it with us on the space show. When it comes out, you'll be probably our primary eyes and ears on it, and I'd love to get some of these principals like Eric back on the show, and the Admiral and Elizondo, and you were trying to get Elizondo on, and then he's no longer doing press appearances. The press is hostile to him. So what the hell?
He had a guy from Examiner? Was it New York Post or was it the Examiner?
I don't remember.
It was New York Post. He kind of went hostile on him, and I think that may be part of it. And I understand what you're saying. But at any rate, and so we'll have to wait and see what happens.
What else? And I'll look forward for you to keeping us posted on that. Anything else for your call today?
I guess I'll see if somebody else calls in. I hope they will.
Any space show stories that you can share over the years of listening and being involved with the show?
You mean like involving somebody else?
Or something that happened with you or did something with the space show that it played a role in some event in your life or decisions or who knows what?
Well, I've certainly enjoyed being involved in it all these years, that's for sure. I've learned some things. But as far as, like, I haven't had anything like a police officer saying, hey, you're that John from Fort Worth on the space show, and I'll let you off with a warning or something. I've never had anything like that happen.
Well,
in fact, I don't know if anybody I personally know actually watches a space show. I mean, other than myself, of course. I've talked to people about it, but I don't think I've managed to lure anybody into it yet.
Nobody watches it. All they can do is listen.
I assume it watches, listens to it. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, listen, we'll talk to you later, and if anything comes up while we're still on the air, give us a call back.
Okay.
Thanks, John. Listeners, John from Fort Worth has vacated from his favorite topic, and we're happy to take your call. Excuse me, or your email, and it is 1-866-687-7223, and email Dr. Space, DRSPACE, at thespaceshow.com. Another topic we could throw out there would be directions or focus or the kind of guests you'd like to hear for 2023, if you think we should do a better job or do some type of job of covering a different kind of topic or something a little different than what we've typically done, I'd be interested in getting that feedback from you. So that's another possibility that we can throw out there. We have another caller. Hang on, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Sunday Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Doug from Redlands, California.
Hi, Doug. Welcome to the show again. How you doing?
Doing well. Was this a show that people are supposed to tell their stories?
That's one thing. We're just calling and tell us what's on their mind with space. But, yeah, this is probably one of the space show story shows. If it's successful and it works out, I might do one or two more of them. But, yeah, this is a possibility where people can post stories on the blog or send them out to me in email, whatever is more convenient for them. But, yeah, this is that show. Why do you have a space show story?
Well, I mean, I don't know about a story, but sort of my story in regards to the space show. It's how I became a space advocate. In 2009, you know, NASA had the L-Cross mission, in which they smashed the Centaur upper stage into the permanently shadowed crater in Kabeas Crater in the South Pole of the Moon, and kicked up water ice. And I remember reading that news report, and it just immediately impressed me. And I was like, man, if there's water ice on the moon, you could electrolyze that and use that to fuel a lunar ferry, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so it was just a passing idea. And I didn't do anything with it. And a couple years later, there must have been some sort of anniversary of the Apollo program. And I remember looking at an astronomy picture of the day, APOD, and I was seeing pictures from the Apollo program. It sort of bummed me out because I was just too young to, you know, to have experienced that really extremely historic event, you know, one of the most significant accomplishments that humans have ever made. And I was looking at it, I was really bummed out, and I got back to thinking about, you know, that L-Cross mission and the implications of it. And so I somehow looked around and I found a online forum. And you got to understand, you know, I had biophysics as my undergraduate degree, but I was not a space advocate at that point. I didn't know really hardly anything. And so I looked around the internet and I found a forum called Permanent. It's an acronym, but basically it's developing lunar and asteroid resources. It was a good forum, and I joined, and I was a complete newbie. I'm just asking very basic questions, but pretty much asking the other guys on the forum about, you know, would it be possible to telerobotically harvest ice, process it, and use it to fuel a cislunar transportation system. And the more I spoke with them and did my own research, the more I came convinced that, in fact, that was doable. It's just a technical challenge. There's nothing fundamentally impossible about it. During that time, so this was 2011, and just about that time, I was becoming sort of more aware of SpaceX and Elon, and I just, even back then, I just, you know, I told people I felt like SpaceX was one of the most important companies in the world. I just felt like that there was some real significance there, and I've continued to believe that. And also, around that time were these, like a study that came out that showed how successful and cost-effective the COTS program was, which, you know, is a public-private program, NASA-funded, SpaceX and Orbital Sciences, and SpaceX went on to develop their Falcon 9, which, you know, is reusable, and there's that reusability animation that SpaceX put out around that time. And so I really sort of put two and two together, especially as the Falcon Heavy was announced. And I began sort of imagining an architecture using the Falcon Heavy to be able to send these telerobots to the moon, harvest ice, and get a transportation system started using just the Falcon Heavy. And in this permanent forum, there was one guy from Texas. I don't really know his real name, but he was wanting to move forward with starting a system or transportation company, and I was supportive of that. You know, philosophically supportive of it. And right at June of 2012 or May of 2012, he had found out about the New Space 2012 program, the conference there. And he says, oh, maybe we should have a booth there and sort of introduce our company. And, you know, he thought there could be potential investors there. And up until that point, I had been completely anonymous. I didn't even use my real name on the internet, on the forum. I had never met another space advocate, and frankly, I was a bit nervous about coming out of the shadows because I felt like, you know, being a space advocate was somehow, I don't know, sort of kooky, and so. I said, yeah, I think we should go to this conference and have a booth, but it's really too last minute, and they decided not to go. But I decided to go anyhow, sort of check it out and sort of make the space advocacy thing real by meeting other people. And at that time, as I was wanting to make real connections, I went to Google Maps and I typed in aerospace companies in my area, and there's not too many, you know, aerospace companies, you know, 60 miles east of Los Angeles in the Inland Empire. But I found one at our former Air Force base, Norton Air Force Base. There was a company there. This was a suborbital company. They would tow a plane and up to high altitude, and then the rocket plane would detach and then do a suborbital trip. And so I was driving across town, and I remember that I had, you know, learned about this company. And so what I did is I just dropped in, and I said, hey, I'm a space advocate, and I've got some ideas. It was just really totally random and sort of weird. And so the vice president there gave me, like, probably 20 minutes of time. I could tell he's sort of busy. And he was trying to understand what I was saying, and he said, you know, do you have any sort of document that I could read? You know, could you send that to me? I said, no, but I'll write it. And what this did is it forced me to really sit down and organize my thoughts and actually, you know, put it in the paper, and I developed a website at that time. But because I was so impressed with COTS, I thought, well, we need a COTS for the moon, and this is where I came up with the lunar COTS concept and the lunar COTS petition. So because these other guys in the permanent forum were not going to New Space, but I was, David, do you remember meeting me there at the 2012 New Space Conference?
Yeah, and I also remember you from one of the earlier AIAA conferences in the Los Angeles area. And you came, but you didn't really have an admission ticket, but you had Lunar COTS business cards. And I remember I introduced you to some people, and you gave out some of the cards, and you did get in. I don't remember if you got into the sessions, although you could have, because they don't have guards in front of them. But you did get into the display area, as I remember. And I remember you meeting a lot of people. I met you at several AIAA things, as I recall, that were years ago when they were doing those in California. I don't necessarily remember New Space, but I more or less remember AIAA for sure.
Well, I'm quite certain that the AIAA came after the New Space 2012.
Probably.
I specifically remember that the New Space 2012 was my first, you know, in-person conference.
So where was New Space 2012 held, do you remember?
I was in San Jose.
Okay, so I went to all of those. I only stopped going to their conferences when they moved it to Seattle. But when they were in and around San Jose and Silicon Valley, and then they had them for several years in San Francisco, and I was going to all of those since I started the space show. In fact, in my book, I have a section on conferences and what they meant to me. And the Space Frontier Foundation, which later became the New Space Conference, helped me in writing the dissertation because people taught me and pulled me aside and spent time educating me and helping me and giving me references to academic material. And then once I had published it and I was doing the space show, I got lots and lots of contacts and guests and PR from attending New Space Conferences. And as I said, I would still be doing it, although it's moved to Seattle and I don't travel as often as I used to. So, yeah, I'm sure I was there, and I'm sure that I met you, because I do remember meeting you early on. I remember your Lunar COTS business card that you had.
Yeah. And I was, before that 2012 conference, I was listening to the space show, and I found the archives to just be an absolutely remarkable resource. And I felt like I was coming to the show pretty late. You know, all these other space advocates had been in there since the L5 Society or something like this. And so I was really trying to sort of catch up and get up to speed. And the archives proved just absolutely incredible. I got to say, I think your older website was easier to, you know, to look through the archives and be able to see all of the titles easily. And man, when I would drive, I would put on an archive show and just listen to it. I remember, the classroom. Remember those?
Yeah. I still, and I'd like to resurrect the classroom, and I've been thinking about doing that quarterly for 2023. It's a lot harder to get panel members and to do things than it was in the past. So it's and a lot of those people that did the classroom that were also close friends of mine, like Logan and some of the others, they just have kind of moved on and they don't do this as much anymore. Logan is coming back on the space show pretty soon,
right?
And but Juris hardly ever comes out of his ranch, and he was a frequent person. And also, some of those webinars, not the classroom, but similar to the classroom, were financed by the Secure World Foundation back then, and they chose the program and the guest. So I am planning to put Zoom capabilities in, and I'm thinking when I'm down due to my knee surgery and not doing shows, if Tom is able to come over and hook it up, that would be a good time, because it'll be in between doing shows and he won't have any pressure that a show is about to start to connect it up.
Yeah.
And if I do that, then I would like to resurrect classroom programs, but I think it would be a lot harder today to structure that kind of a program. I had guys that wanted to teach people, and a lot of people don't want to teach anymore. They just want to shout and be heard.
So to me, and sort of to cut a long story short, because I mean that a lot for me happened in 2012, but that's 10 years ago, and a lot has changed.
Absolutely.
And in fact, so basically, what I didn't realize at the time, I mean, I was just focused on the transportation system between Earth and Moon, and then the lunar COTS concept. But what I didn't realize is that in listening to the space show, I was actually picking up, I was learning about all sorts of things that I didn't know that I would have an interest in, including the human factors. You know, a lot of people think that because I'm a physician, I must be particularly interested in the human factors. Well, I am, but really it all started with being interested in the transportation system and even policy. So I really sort of moved forward with all of the concepts that I've picked up in the space show, and I began to have specific ideas. And as I updated my website, which is initially just a, you know, come to the website and sign the petition, it eventually transformed into a very, very extensive website covering all aspects of space development, according to what I call the plan for sustainable space development. And it, in the last like 4 or 5 years, it's gotten really organized into a very systematic and comprehensive website that describes all sorts of aspects. And then the other significant thing that happened to me as a space advocate was Starship, which took a little while for it to be clear what it was going to turn out to be. But frankly, I'm convinced that that really is the future of space development. And I think most people, you know, most space advocates, you know, believe that. And that has really transitioned me away from my Falcon Heavy concepts, which I think was a totally legitimate and doable thing. But with Starship's greater capability and much less cost, you know, I my concepts now are, I think, a lot more refined, and now I'm moving forward with the Space Development Network, Moon Mars Analog Base, the InstaBase, and the approaches that I've mentioned before on the space show.
You know, listeners, Doug is a really interesting story for the space show, because when I met Doug, as you've heard his story, he was just sort of getting interested in things and finding out what to specialize in and what to reach out for, and he was really inquisitive and very thirsty for all of this. And you know, if those of you who listen to a lot of space shows, you know, I always kind of say to people, well, what are you going to do to make that happen? What's your role to bring that to reality? Those are some of my favorite statements. And mostly I get dead air. But with Doug, he actually did something to make the things he believes in and likes and is interested in happen. He's done projects like he did with Biosphere with the University of Arizona. He had a Falcon Heavy demo thing that he lugged down to Florida for the launch of the Falcon Heavy. He's done other different things and formed websites and organizations and discussion groups that educate and help people evolve. And if I were giving out prizes, Doug would get a premium gold, silver, platinum prize of all of it, because he has put into motion what he believes in to try to change things, to educate, and to make a difference. And he hasn't just put an idea out there and then he's done his share. There's nothing more to do. He's not like that. And I'm really thrilled that the space show played some sort of part in his development along this way. He would have gotten there anyway without the space show. But it is heartening to know that it played a part in him. And he is really an amazing, much more than an advocate. He has educated himself on aerospace engineering. He has done so much to be able to promote his ideas and get it out there to people. And if you see him at a conference, he always has people around him that want more and more from him. So, Doug, you have a remarkable story, and you're a real unique guy. And I'm glad the space show played a part in it, and I'm glad we're friends. I just think you have done an awful lot to help push space development, settlement, and information and models of how things could work to lots and lots of people that probably have benefited from it. And if you weren't doing it, nobody would do it, because most people, they put out a good idea and they feel like they've done their share. Somebody else needs to run with it. I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs I had on the show, and they put out an idea and I ask them what they're going to do about it, and it's nothing. Somebody has to come pick up my idea and run with it. If I dare say, are you going to put any money into it, any effort into it on your part? The answer is no, I'm not able to. Well, Doug found a way. I mean, he was going to do something with Meteor Crater
to spread the word of space a couple of years back. And he actually went down there and talked to the people and took it quite a ways on his own dime to see if his idea could flourish. And I wish it had. I love Meteor Crater. But it was beyond the realm of reason, right? But Doug's a real unique people, unique person, everybody. And again, I commend him, and I think he's a really great example of the space show at its best, although many, many other groups and sources of information have influenced Doug. I don't pretend to be his biggest or most significant influence, but I'm just thrilled that we played a part in it.
Well, thank you, Dave. That's very kind of you. So I'll be watching my mailbox every day for this gold platinum award, okay?
Well, I wish I had one, but maybe someday we'll do an award show, and at least you'll be acknowledged maybe to a bigger audience. But stick with it. It's got its ups and downs, as you know, and it's got its frustrations. But stick with it, because in the end, I think we're all better by having everything go through space than muddle through the way things are happening here on Earth without space. I still believe that to this day. And
let me just do a little shameless plug. If anybody who's listening, whether live or in archive, you know, if you would like to get involved, I do have the organization, the Space Development Network, and what we do is we organize people into working groups, and I think, Dave, you made mention of that. Like for example, our agriculture working group has made really great progress.
Right.
But there's many, many different aspects. So if listeners would go to developspace.info and sort of look over the plan for sustainable space development, and then it's joined for free. It's just a, you know, organization of space advocates, free forever. Would love to have you join us. Developspace.info.
Were you at the Mars Society conference?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, I was going to go, but my knee has kept me pretty close to home, except for the dental problems in San Francisco. Real quick, did you think it was a good conference? Anything that you want to talk about or point out or shout out about it?
It was a great conference, first and foremost, because we were finally back together in person, which is always awesome. I thought the attendance was decent. I wouldn't say it was huge, but it was certainly decent. And of course, Zubrin is always in top form, and this year was no different. I would say one thing that really jumped out at me, and I know this is available on YouTube. It would be worth watching is that there was a team from Mongolia. And what was so amazing about this team is they're starting their own Mars analog base in the Gobi Desert. I don't know what it is about Mongolia, but they have such strong support from professionals and the government, and they have like one of the crazy largest Mars Society organizations, and just happens to be in Mongolia.
Wow. That says a lot for wanting to go to Mars. I'll look it up. And did you talk to them? How's their English, if I could do a space show with them?
There's maybe about eight people there, and I would say five or six didn't seem like they knew much English, but there is a fellow who's sort of their team leader, and his English is decent. I was able to converse with him fairly well, and so I shared with him about the InstaBase concept, and so he gave me his email address, so we'll be in touch about that.
Can you forward it to me, and I'll contact him and see if he has telephone lines where he could do it, and tell him I was referred by you. But that'd be an interesting show.
Oh, it would be fascinating. The key thing about the Mongolian situation is that they describe their culture as a culture that is developed around a very difficult environment. And so they feel like that as a culture, the Mongolian culture is sort of specifically the sort of culture that would, you know, take to Mars easily, because they're used to living in an austere environment and figuring out how to do that. But yeah, I'll go ahead and send you that email address.
And you met my friend Sherry Bell there, correct?
Oh yeah, she's a hoot.
Yeah,
she really is.
Very high energy lady, absolutely. All right,
yeah,
Doug.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call. We'll talk to you soon. Bye bye.
Okay, take care.
Bye. We thank Doug very much for that call and his information, and also about the Mongolians. Listeners, great to hear from you. If you want to give us a call, 866-687-7223. And yes, we do have another call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the space show today. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hi, this is Deli Ford, and I am in Philadelphia.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, great. And so I just wanted to start off, too, to echo a lot of the things that Doug said. So I've actually worked with Doug previously as part of the Agricultural Working Group, and so I presented at the Mars Society Conference as well, and I used information that we had, you know, developed as part of that group, as part of my presentation on a lot of the logistics of long-term space and farming in situ.
Great. Were there a lot of people listening to your particular talk at the Mars Society? Because they're segment talks, right? They're tracks. Is that correct?
Yeah, and there were a fair amount. So like Doug said, it wasn't the biggest conference, but especially coming out of COVID, I would say that things seemed to be fairly lively and everyone was very engaged. So it was actually part of two talks, and at both of them, the audience was around 40 people or so live. And I know that they were live streaming as well, and everything will be available on video. A lot of the Mars Society videos online were part of what initially got me involved in the space community.
What do you suggest or what do you focus on with your agricultural committee?
So in the working group, a lot of what we were working on, and it's been a bit since we've met, but the focus tended to be on the logistics of early stage in situ resource utilization. So part of my talk at the, or the focus of my talk at the Mars Society was actually about when is that determining moment for when you should begin to farm based on the resources available versus importing goods based on the existing rocket technology. And using a Starship-based model, really after a year is when you should begin to look into in situ resource utilization. So it's definitely, there's a lot of flexibility, though, based on, you know, the systems that you're looking at, and there are a lot of communities developing space farming systems that I think are worth pursuing, though.
Interesting. Are you a person who's planning or would like to go to Mars?
Yes, eventually. My plan is to retire to Mars, but so that's actually the reason I've called in. So I actually have called in to talk about Moondao, which is the so I'm a contributor for Moondao, but it's a space development group that is working on funding for early-stage space exploration and essentially getting humans access to space.
What's their website?
Moondao.com, so M-O-O-N-D-A-O. And so DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. It's essentially a democratically run company.
Okay. Is it raising money now? Is it making progress?
Yes. So the company essentially did like an initial coin offering on the blockchain in November of last year. And since then, they've been using that runway to fund projects. So the most recent one that's been very public was sending Dude Perfect on the Blue Origin rocket. And he has recently released a video about that. But we've also worked in research positions, so we've been working with the Open Lunar Foundation to fund a research position with them, and we're looking at a lot of satellite technology. So a proposal that recently got approved was to put QR codes in different insignia onto satellites as part of enhancing the experience with it and adding another layer of engagement.
Sounds great. So are you planning something like that with Mars?
Yes, so I know Mars is eventually in the works. We're really looking at like a moon focus as a first step to Mars because we believe that humans can be on the moon by 2030.
Okay, I wish they could get there sooner.
We agree.
Are you talking about commercial people on the moon or government people on the moon?
Commercial. So the majority of our activities are focused on engaging with the commercial space sector. to, and so we do a bit of in-house development, but the majority of that is going to be in ancillary systems. So we're really looking at showing that there is a commercial pathway for decentralized space access.
Okay, why until 2030? Why do you think it will be 2030 and not something sooner? Don't we have the capability to maybe get to the moon sooner? No, we do have rockets that can do it. I admit the government program is probably slower than that, but the privates could probably do it if they wanted to.
Well, and nothing about our approach is, you know, limiting us to 2030. It's essentially just a rallying point within the community that we can be on the moon for New Year's Eve 2030 as like a nominal goal. But looking at the development of the industry more broadly, I think that it's a very realistic time point because you want a few years of maturation after the initial landing. So, you know, my talk about the Artemis food or about food systems in space on the moon in particular here, you want like a year or so for those food systems to mature so that way when we go to the moon, it's actually a place that we can enjoy. You know, it's not just a concentrated landing.
What about some of the groups that are looking to build space hotels and maybe a lunar hotel? Are you considering or factoring that approach in, or how does that factor in or not factor into what you're doing?
I would say considering at this point simply because there is not a whole lot of concrete planning around that sort of thing. You know, as those people mature into the market, I think that they're definitely people that we're going to be keeping our eye on. And, you know, Moondao as an organization also provides a nice counterpoint for the business case on that as well. They can sort of justify their efforts to place a settlement on the moon because we are a potential customer.
Okay. Cool. I'll have to look in and become more familiar with what you're doing. And do you have a newsletter that you send out or keep people posted on what you're doing?
We do, and that's available through the website as well. The direct link for that is going to be moondao.com/explore.
Okay. Because I'll go sign up for it and stay in touch and keep me posted on your activities that now that I know about you.
Yeah, will do. And I'll just say, too, that the Space Show is one of the things that helped get me involved in the whole space community. So,
How long have you been listening to it?
I'd say since about 2018 is when I really started.
Okay. Well, that's 4 years, so thank you for that. Well, keep us posted, and if you ever have something coming up that you think we should know about, email me and let me know, and we can talk about it on the air, okay?
Yeah, we'll do, and we have plenty of projects brewing.
Okay. I appreciate it, and hopefully I'll hear from you down the road, okay?
All right. Well, thanks for the time.
Thank you. Bye-bye. excuse me, listeners. You can give us a call. Our line is free again, 866-687-7223. And the email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Does anyone think we'll get to the moon sooner than 2030 with people to stay? I'm not talking about a flags and footprint mission where we might open the door and step down for 30 minutes or something like that. But to get to the moon to stay, does anyone actually think that we can do it before 2030? If so, please email me or you can give us a call at our toll-free number, 866-687-7223. And another question I wonder about all the time is whether the Artemis program and the Gateway is really going to be the program that opens up the moon and leads to. I don't think it's going to give us a permanent presence, but it might lead us to a permanent presence on the moon. Is there anyone out there supporting that point of view? I'd like to hear from you, and if so, why? And if you don't support that kind of view, as to why you don't support it would also be interesting. So there's still plenty of time for you to call if we depending on whether we're a 90-minute show or a two-hour show today. So let us hear from you. And you know, some other things that interest me, I am pretty solidly interested on the national securities part of space. So I'd love to hear from people as to how you see commercial space staying essential to our nation, both in terms of the economy and in terms of the national security aspect. Again, our guest on Friday talked about that, but we've had other guests point that out. I'd like to know if you share that perspective, why or why not. I certainly share it. I think it's for real. I see more and more importance coming to commercial space, including the new space sector, for national security. Again, most of this has to do with satellites and imaging. It doesn't have a lot to do with human spaceflight, unfortunately. But if anyone wants to comment on this, today would be a good opportunity to do that. I do have, we haven't had many emails today, but we have had phone calls. Cheryl is in Chicago, and Cheryl says, why do you, or why did your guest on Friday think that the outcome of the election will not impact commercial space in any big way? I think there's more to it than just saying it's become essential to the government, and both parties realize that. Can you shed more light on that, David? So, Cheryl, I don't know if I can shed more light on it or not. I sort of agreed with Andrew, but I do think commercial space is a very significant growing part of the economy, and I get a lot of PR announcements for companies. I mean, a lot. And even though the economy's in trouble and inflation is soaring and interest rates are rising outrageously, in my opinion, I'm still getting maybe 3 to 4 PR announcements a week. And I've said this on other shows, and I say it, and I'm kind of critical when I say it, but most of these PR statements are announcing funding for various companies that none of us have ever heard of, or very few that we have ever heard of. So that'll be company JYZ announces a successful placement, and then I'll see several million dollars of funding. And that's in spite of this economy. So what are they seeing that makes them want to continue to be investing in space? So I think there's a lot of support for what Andrew said. Let's take this phone call, and we can return to this topic. Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to the Open Lines program. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hey, David. This is John in Fremont, California.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. I guess I have sort of a space show story. I started listening to the space show on my commute while I was working here in the San Francisco Bay Area. I can't remember the exact time I started listening. I looked on your show blog and found the earliest reference to me calling into the show was November 15th.
Of what year? Do you remember what
can you
year?
Hear me?
Yeah, do you remember what year?
Yeah, 2015.
Okay.
And I think I was listening way before then. So I think I was listening way back to 2010, but I didn't call in right away. You know, and I was listening to mainly archives as I was, you know, driving home or driving to work. But you know, I've been interested in space for quite some time, And I think I've told you, and this is on my blog, on my About tab on my blog, that I published a newsletter called Space Colonization Progress back in the 1990s. And, I was active in the local chapter of the National Space Society, and I was a long-time contributor to the Space Studies Institute, and then... I got married and had kids, and my career started to take more of my time. So I backed off on my space related activities, when I started a family. And just over the last 10 years, as I approached retirement, I started listening to your show, and it inspired me to get back into space advocacy. Hearing Charles Miller on the show talk about March Storm inspired me to go join his team, and I walked around Capitol Hill with him advocating for the Alliance for Space Development and their things that they wanted Congress to fund. Other guests on your show triggered me to start going to conferences locally, like Space Access Society, Starship Congress, Contact, and I met you in person at some of those conferences. And through these activities and the proliferation of new space companies and, the success of SpaceX, And all these things I heard on your show over the last few years, it inspired me to create my blog, which focuses on technology for space settlement. So listening to your show enabled me to make connections in the space industry and academia that lead to source material for my blog. So people like Chaim Ben Roya and Bruce Damer and Joe Carroll, Jim Logan, Tom Murata, Dennis Wingo, and so many others have provided rich source material for my post. And these connections in your show blog were jumping off points for deeper research. And, your expertise and advice and critical thinking and emphasis on due diligence really helped shape my research methods, and I think it honed my skills in finding new sources of information, which in turn has resulted in me making recommendations for new guests on your show and eventually joining the advisory board. So I'm really grateful for the space show, and it's renewed my passion for space development, and I hope to continue participating and supporting the show for many years to come.
Well, I hope so, too. You're a great source of new guests, too, but also really solid information in areas that I don't pursue as strongly as you do. So it's a great match, and if you weren't there, I think there'd be a void. I don't know that there would be an easy clone popping up to all of what you do and contribute into your perspective. So take pride in that, and your ideas on when we're going to get humans on the moon, do you think it's going to be 2030, or do you think we can do it sooner?
I think humans will get on the moon by then, but as far as a permanent presence, I don't know. It depends on how fast and how successful SpaceX is. The SLS keeps getting moved out on their subsequent missions and their plans for the first landing, and it hasn't even flown yet, David. So, but neither has SpaceX. So it's a race.
Let that not stop space advocacy. So But I think both will fly. Although I'm more positive that Starship will fly on its designated date than I am that SLS will even fly on the 14th. I bet they find another glitch in their countdown on the 14th, and it gets delayed again.
I was thinking the same thing, maybe they'll get it down this time. But man, it is old technology, and that's really, I don't know, it's iffy, it's risky, you know, and NASA doesn't like to take risks. So
one way is to keep perfecting it, right, and take it back to the VAB for more work.
Has SpaceX got a launch license for their December launch?
I haven't heard anything about that directly, but I assume I assume they have some kind of demo license. I think they have a limited demo license for like six flights. Something recalls to me that they got a temporary permit for six flights, and then it gets reevaluated or something like that, or six demo flights. If Doug is still listening, he probably knows it off the top of his head and can either email it in or call in after you're off the phone, or maybe another listener knows it too. But something, I'm reminded of something where they got a limited number of approvals for flights, and it's only temporary. But somebody should call in and give us more accurate information, I hope.
All right.
What else?
Cool.
Anything else?
Yeah, that's it. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Oh.
and looking forward to coming on the show next month.
I believe that there's a total eclipse coming up. You're the astronomy guy. Are you up on this?
This is a lunar eclipse, right?
Yeah, a lunar total eclipse,
yeah.
Global, and the moon is supposed to appear blood red, and I think it's the 14th. I think is it the same night as the SLS launch? Let me see if I can find it real quick. But I was going to ask you about that if they called, because I know you're the astronomy buff.
Yeah, I read about it. It's kind of late for us here on the West Coast, but that's okay. I mean, if you like staying up late and seeing that.
It's November 8th.
I've seen many lunar eclipses. They're not as spectacular as solar, so that doesn't excite me that much, but it is pretty cool.
Okay, so it's November 8th, which is election night, and it will be, this is crappy, 5:17 a.m. Eastern Time, meaning for you and me, John, it would be 2:17 a.m. It will last 85 minutes, ending at 6:42 a.m., and the moon is supposed to be blood red during the total lunar eclipse on November 8th.
Yeah, I've seen many lunar eclipses. It's pretty cool. But yeah, that should be good.
Maybe we can get them to change the time. Make it a little convenient? Because that's crummy. That's really a bad time. It's not convenient. Let's see. The Tuesday's blood moon will begin at. It begins at 3:02. So and it ends at 5:17, and you'll have to adjust the time. It begins at 12:02. P.M. West Coast time, so I'm usually up at midnight, so I might be able to see the start of it, but I don't think I'm going to stay up for 2 hours to watch it. All right, listeners, John, anything else for you?
No, that's it, David. We'll talk soon.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye. Listeners, there's still some time if you would like to give us a call, and the toll-free number, 866-687-7223. I have a note from Dr. Jurist, who did this by email rather than calling in. He says three stories have stood out for him. And I forget the first date I met John, but it was at a Space Access Society in Phoenix, Arizona. And neither of us were in the happy hour. We were sitting out. There was a lawn in front of the happy hour room at the hotel. I forget the name of the hotel. And we were sitting in the lawn, and
John had just finished talking to me on a recent space show program. So I saw his name tag and he saw mine. We started talking about something nuclear, I think, with our introductory conversation. Anyway, he says three limited points. I'm going to read his email. First was Al Zeringer and launch cost. That led you to question whether Al or the space cadets were right. Writing down an analysis to clarify our thinking and extensive mission creep led to the three doctors' papers that we wrote. That was with John, myself, and Dr. Sam Dinkin. And we concluded back then that reusability and reducing range costs and insurance were key factors to moving forward. Subsequent developments with SpaceX took the U.S. down the path to significantly reducing launch costs. Second, John Powell proposed airships to orbit, and Charles Pooley, who has passed away, unfortunately, was a real incredible asset for the space show, and was entertaining as well, which makes him even a bigger asset, succinctly showed why that concept was a non-starter. Shortly after one of your listeners asked me to explain why Pooley was right, I did so, put my comments on your blog and stirred up some controversy that resulted in what I believe was the longest commentary on a single topic on your blog, a huge expenditure of energy chasing down rabbit holes. Third, Brandenburg's hypothesis about Mars being nuked and James Van Cannon's spirited but illogical dissection of that hypothesis. A potential addition, the guy proposing his anti-gravity idea, who was unwilling to do it in a simple proof-of-concept experiment because the negative results would hurt his book sales. Yeah, that guy was on the space show two or three times in the early years of the space show promoting his book, and John asked him, and I supported it, why don't you do this simple experiment? I mean, this is really easy and low cost. And he confessed that it would hurt the sales of his book if it didn't work. Okay, at least he did it on air. A missed opportunity story, the Walking Eagle Award failing to take off as a BS identifier. That was when John and then Tom Olson and myself and Shubber Ali created the Space Cynics site to tackle a lot of fantasy and BS claims early on. And we would shout out and call out different arguments on that site. Eventually, I think Shubber moved on and Tom went into some different areas, and it just kind of eventually died out. He says for comic relief, there's a Dr. Doug Haynes, not to be confused with Doug Plata, who called in earlier, who claims to be an aerospace engineer. And I put him on for some of his books, and I think he's been on the show three or four times. I haven't heard from Doug in a long, long time, but he was really wild out there. He sent me his books, and they were really out there, too. I mean, you'd have to go back and listen to Dr. Doug Haynes and listen to him in order to kind of get the comic relief that Dr. Juris is talking about. Haynes is spelled H-A-Y-N-E-S, and I think there's anywhere between 3 to 5 programs with Doug. And the latter ones were about his 3-volume books that he wrote. So those are the contributions for space show stories from Dr. Jurist. I have an email from from John Jossi. Can you spell out the URL for Moondal? Yes, I have to look it up again, but you're spelling it incorrectly, so hang on. Just a minute, and I'll see if I can. moondal.com. So that should take you there. Let's see, listeners, what's our timing like? Okay, we're a little bit past 90 minutes. Cheryl, I wanted to finish responding to your email about national security and commerce. I was looking for one of my PR press releases that I got just in the last week. And this tells me that there's a big commercial factor here, and that money is still flying and flowing into commercial space. Let's see if this is one. This is from the Asteroid Institute and their progress report. That's not the one I'm looking for. I may not be able to find it, and I don't want to take up umpteen hours of time to try to find it. I'll look in one more place, listeners, and then I'll throw the towel in. But I keep getting these PR things, and you know, they're unbelievable that so much money is continuing to flow, and that tells me there's some meat behind the commercial space industry, and it's to be taken seriously. Otherwise, this kind of money wouldn't be flowing. Now, that doesn't mean that all of these ventures that money flows to are going to be successful, but the fact that there's so much of it flowing, it's pretty amazing. And the fact that I'm seeing, and they're requesting airtime on the space show, even though they don't have any real products yet, and or if they do, they're in the really early stages of development. In this environment and with these interest rates, they're able to continue to raise this kind of money is telling me that there's some real meat behind the commercial space business, and people aren't throwing the towel in and aren't running from it. So as for national security, we can see how China and Russia are reacting to these commercial satellites. They're really disturbed about it. Well, they wouldn't be disturbed about it if they didn't think these commercial satellites had value that enhanced U.S. capabilities over their capabilities. So that's another sort of leading indicator that I'm aware of. And that's why I tend to agree with what Andrew said about space being absolutely essential for national security and for commerce. And I hope that's a good answer for you. If not, you might want to post some more about it on the blog, and I can answer it, or maybe other listeners can respond to you as well. Let's see, Jossie sent another note. He says moondow.com is a Chinese site. Huh. Okay, hopefully your caller will email you the correct spelling. So it might be the correct spelling, but maybe it's not a .com site. So you might maybe Google for it. I don't know. But if you're still listening and you can email in the correct website link to that, please do that and let me know, and I'll post it on the blog, and including putting it in our summary statement. Thanks for that information, John. Let's see. I think that caller came from Doug, right? So maybe Doug can put us in touch with him and get that correct website. Listeners, we're approaching an hour and 45 minutes. There's still time if you want to call 1-866-687-7223. And there's still time if you want to send in an email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. We'd like to hear from you. If you do have a space show story that you want to tell us about, you can post it on our blog if we're off the air.
And you can also send it to me via email, Dr. Space, DrSpace, at thespaceshow.com. Those are the two ways you can do it after this program ends. And we'd like to hear from you. I'm sure many in the archive audience probably have some stories that they'd like to share with us. So please do share and let us know what your thoughts are on how the space show maybe made a difference for you in some part of your life, and or entertained you, or did something that was really not the usual. Let's say that. I'm not hearing the phone ringing, so I guess maybe 90 to 45 minutes is about it for today. We will have another open line show. I'm not sure I told you when it was, but right now it's planned for December 11th, Sunday, December 11th. And I think there might be, no, there's no more open line shows planned in 2022. And again, if you have guests that you'd like to recommend and you can tell me how to contact them, I'm all for it. And if you think they'd make a great end-of-the-year guest, please let me know, and I'll do my best to follow up. I think we'll call it a day for today, for this Sunday program on the 6th. I hope all of you vote, and I hope all of you are satisfied with the election. That would be interesting for everybody who voted to be satisfied with the election. I'd like to see how that works. But I do hope everybody votes. I think it's important, and it is a way for us to make our thoughts known on what the government is doing, how it's doing, the direction it's going, what it spends its money on, which is really our money, what we'd like to see the government focus on more, like maybe more space, something like that. And if you think the elections are going to really impact space development in one way or another, and you're an archive listener and you want to comment on that, please do so with our blog. So I want to thank everybody who did call today, and I want to thank those who did send in emails. And we look forward to our next space show program, which will be election night and total lunar eclipse night, a twofer, and the guest that night, Bob Zimmerman. Hopefully you'll tune in. You won't stay glued to the television just for election returns, but you'll come in and hear Bob's impression of Space 2022 and Space 2023. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend. Keep it safe. And always, always look up, and stay up late and look up on the 8th so that you can see the total blood red lunar eclipse. Goodbye from all the callers and the emailers and the space show and myself. And once again, keep looking up. Thank you for being part of the space show. And please don't forget, our annual campaign has started, and we do need your support. And I hope you will support us. Remember, you do get a deduction from your federal taxes if you donate, and probably your state taxes as well. There is a PayPal form at the top of our homepage. And if you want to use a check, it's made payable to 1ONE Giant Leap Foundation and mails to our Las Vegas address, which is on our website and the PayPal form. But if you need any help or have any questions, email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Once again, goodbye, everybody.